Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:18 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is March 19th. Well, initially today we had a pretty reasonable rally on the Nasdaq, but it gave up some of the advance. I think that was equally true of both the S&P 500 and the Dow Jones Industrials Average. There is certainly a willingness to try and buy the dip and to look on the bright side and to think that there is going to be at least a mean reversion, considering just how oversold markets are. There is the clear potential that at least we're due a bear market bounce or a dead cat rally or however one would like to characterize it, but certainly with an oversold condition such as we have right now, then there are obviously going to be people willing to trade around that idea. What I find particularly interesting is looking at the rebound we've seen on Amazon. Amazon is in a rather interesting situation. There is obviously going to be a bounce in demand for online shopping because people are at home, they are going to the supermarket less, they're going to retail stores much less because most of the retail stores are closed. So that's going to create demand for online shopping. The problem is that Amazon's workers are getting sick. They had one warehouse in New York closed down today. They've had warehouses in Italy closed down because of workers getting sick. And then there are obviously the risks that delivery drivers are taking by moving between houses. And particularly when they're delivering groceries and they have to deliver alcohol, for example, then they have to check people's ages, so they have to get closer to people. They have to close the 6 foot distance that's recommended between people. That's potentially going to inhibit the company's ability to deliver goods and services. That was something that China didn't have because they simply ignored the risk to the driver, and also because a lot of the buildings are tower blocks, then they did a handover at the foot of the tower block, and there was somebody there to ensure that everybody got their packages. There is the additional point that Amazon has told third-party sellers to stop sending inventory, that they're going to prioritize healthcare and food items. But of course, what that is also going to do is ensure that a number of discretionary items are going to run out. Well, of course, if the biggest consumer discretionary share runs out of inventory to sell, well, that's going to result in a decline in sales. So certainly there has been an uptick in sales in the short term, but if they stop having discretionary items sent into warehouses, well, that is going to result in a decline in sales. I think that's potentially why they can't hold the intraday rally. Well, then there is the additional point that we are seeing a significant source of funding pressure in the financial sector. The TED spread has now broken on the upside. This is the difference between LIBOR and 3 month LIBOR and 3 month Treasury bills. And when it pops on the upside, it is clear indication of stress in the banking sector. And it's not difficult to understand why that might be the case. Jobless data for the 7th of March was released today, and it popped on the upside. So that has now completed its base formation. But these figures are reported with a 2 week lag. So the next figure on the 26th of March next week will reflect the 14th of March. The vast majority of schools closed down around the 14th of March. And the lockdowns we've seen in places like New York or San Francisco also took place on the weekend of the 14th. There is obviously then the repercussions of those lockdowns where literally millions of people have lost their jobs across cities right across America and Europe. So it's quite likely that we're going to see a very considerable jump in the number of jobless seekers over the next few weeks. There are literally hundreds of thousands of people employed in almost all the big population states in the retail, in the restaurant and hotel sectors. And with these businesses shutting down, it's going to represent a very significant drag. The knock-on of that is that, on the one hand, the vast majority of people rely on their employer to provide them with health care. When you lose your job, you then get access to your health care at the same premium that you did when you left, except that you also have to pay the employer's portion. In other words, your health care premium doubles. Most people can't afford that, so they just go without health care. So not only are we going to have potentially millions of people out of work, but they're not going to have health insurance. So that's very significant. I got a text message from Covered California just before I started saying that if you're going to lose your health care, then you need to apply. So they are opening up the health exchanges to people who may not previously have qualified for assistance, but there are going to be a lot more people looking for assistance. And of course, that also represents a very significant fiscal drag. But then, of course, you have the fact that people are going to start becoming delinquent on their rent and on their cars. The problem then is that landlords who have mortgages are going to start becoming delinquent on their loans. Then the banks are going to start to feel the effects of that, which is why they are hoarding capital, which is why the TED spread is rising. When we then think about the performance of banking sectors, not simply in the USA, where we've had a significant decline and also a very clear short-term oversold condition, but it's a very similar story in Europe, where we've had a very significant drawdown as well. Obviously, we do have a short-term oversold conditions. When any index halves in the space of 4 weeks, then there is a short-term oversold condition. And we are certainly seeing that the ECB is finally falling into line and getting the message that they need to offer assistance. The euro pulled back by an additional 2 cents in here today. And there is the clear potential that it is going to go lower. What I found particularly interesting is that we're starting to see differentiation coming through in the way that the market is pricing some of these peripheral bonds. So we had a very meaningful contraction in yields for Italian debt. It contracted by 70 basis points because the ECB is going to start buying those bonds. But we did not see the same reaction in German Bunds. In fact, the Bund yield was higher. Well, that's going to represent a significant contraction in the spread, but not for the same reason that we've seen historically. Historically, simply that Italian yields have compressed faster than German yields, whereas now they're running to meet each other. And the real potential here is that we're going to start to see, on the one hand, Germany breaking its own fiscal rules and issuing emergency debt. So that alone is a cause for concern in terms of the value of the bond market. But then there is the additional potential that Germany is going to have to fall into line and help to issue Eurozone bonds, and with the specific aim of helping to plug the hole in the fiscal condition of countries like Italy and Spain that are pulling out all the plugs in order to try and rescue their economies from the coronavirus. One of the clear potential outcomes in Europe is that this is going to be the catalyst for a debt union. And of course, what follows a debt union is a fiscal union. So that, I think, is something that is a clear potential for the Eurozone. It requires, it's always going to have required a clear crisis in a country like Germany in order to push through this kind of federalism through the public opposition. And this could well be that occasion. So we are likely to see a great deal of compression in spreads right across Europe, because there is the clear potential that the end point of this evolution in Europe is going to be a central government bond issuing authority, where there will be just one value for all bonds. This is pretty similar to what went on to create the United States of America. It was all of the state's debt was absorbed by the federal government. And that is quite potentially what we're going to see in the United States of Europe as well. So that's certainly a potential outcome that I think we need to pay particular attention to. Now, when we think about what's going on in the UK, the Bank of England has signed up to issue a very significant quantitative easing program in the order of about £600 billion. But that's also quite similar to the quantity that of money that the ECB had committed to issuing. What we've seen over the last day has been, or the last weeks I should say, has been a significant contraction in the total assets of central banks, and that has been 100% linked to the rebound we've seen in government in the US dollar. So the rally in the US dollar has had a very significant contractionary effect on central bank balance sheets all over the world. Now, when we look at what the Fed did today, is they have not only opened up swap lines again with other central banks, but they've greatly extended the number of countries they're willing to do swaps with. So that did help to steady the Australian dollar in here today, and it was well off its lows. But obviously, there are still significant funding issues. And obviously, then we have the continued threat to global economic growth as a result of the response to the coronavirus. What's also, I think, particularly noteworthy is the currencies of countries that have not yet been successful in opening swap lines with the Federal Reserve. Their currencies are continuing to deteriorate. So the Indonesian rupiah, in particular, has broken on the downside. The Indian rupee has also broken on the downside. What was interesting today is following some statements by Narendra Modi to the effect that they're closing all air travel coming into India, the market took some heart from that. It was only down about 205 points, but there have been some differentiation between the weaker and the stronger. I think banks in particular, HDFC, which would be one of the better performing banks, was in positive territory, for example. But considering the fact that no country has successfully been able to inhibit the growth of the coronavirus, it's very unlikely that India is going to be able to do so. The fact that the number of cases in places like Malaysia and in Indonesia is starting to ramp up now, I think that punctures a significant hole in the argument that the spread of the virus is going to be curtailed by hot, warm weather. I think the growth of the virus in places like Australia, which is now experiencing its summer, is also cause for questioning that hypothesis, which has been gaining ground internationally. But I just don't believe that there is enough data to support that conclusion just yet. Well, the knock-on effect of slowing down the Indian economy, slowing down the Indonesian economy, the fact that the Chinese renminbi has also been weakening here over the course of the last couple of days. It has now, the dollar has broken its sequence of lower rally highs against it, and China is on its own in terms of funding the issues that its own banking sector has. There are no swap lines available for China. When we then think about what is the Chinese banking sector doing, well, it's been really very steady over the course of the last few weeks, but it did break down in a rather dynamic manner so far here this week. So the I think there is a clear willingness to just simply accept that Italy now has more cases of the coronavirus than China ever had. Just if we simply examine that for common sense, it makes absolutely no sense. The number, the people, or the population of Wuhan is 11 million. The population of Hubei is 80 million. Population of China is 1.3 billion. And to say that they have gone through an entire cycle of massive spread of the coronavirus and came up with fewer cases than Italy simply tells us that there has been massive obfuscation of the number of cases in China, and Italy is one of the only countries that has got a clear incentive in reporting an accurate number, because the ability of the government to avoid the fiscal straitjacket is to have as big a problem as possible. So Italy's figures are probably close to true, and China's are probably nowhere close to true. It's much more likely that China has had millions of cases and that they've simply been ignored. And the deterioration in the banking sector is something that is, I think, particularly worth paying attention to. Now, there is, and when we start to think about what exactly is going on, we have the short-term oversold condition. Companies like Facebook have been able to string together 2 days on the upside, and it's been a while since it's been able to put 2 days together on the upside, and it is right in the region of the lows from back in 2018. Amazon has also had a short-term bounce. Tesla has bounced from the $400 area and the region of the upper side of its underlying range, having pulled back from $1,000. So again, this is another share. This is down more than 50%, more like 60%. And we're starting to see the first evidence of some support coming through. But the problem is that there are going to be a lot of investors who have been shaken by the speed of the decline. So any significant bounce we get is going to be taken as an opportunity to not sell at the low. And with these massive reactions against the prevailing trend, then there are going to be a lot of people who were shocked into inactivity. They'll be using any source of strength to liquidate positions. We've already seen that there's been a massive deleveraging, and that's part of the reason why the dollar has been so strong and the banking sector has been so weak and the TED spread is rising and the constriction of liquidity is evident right across the banking sector. The response of the Federal Reserve in particular to plow money into the repo market is, a very significant factor. When we have a significant uptick in the TED spread, it's worth reminding ourselves that the Federal Reserve has made upwards of $500 billion available to the repo market, but the totals that are being drawn down are considerably lower than that. Not only are banks not lending, and not only are banks cancelling any extension of credit that they were planning on over the last while, but they're not drawing down capital on the repo market because they're not lending out on a repo basis. We're getting a breakdown in the willingness of banks to trust counterparties, and that kind of credit crunch is something that is going to deter the ability of the market to rally in this scenario. So we're not at the end of this corrective phase just yet. I think it is time to start looking at what a potential shopping list might look like. And obviously there is the continued outperformance on a relative basis of the technology sector that is certainly worth paying attention to. In the precious metal markets, silver prices were in positive territory today, but are still right in the region of their lows. Gold prices are also still under some pressure here, and but still in the region of the 200-day moving average. The gold shares had rebounded and gave up some of that advance in here today, but are still in positive territory. The reality here is that with the debasement of currencies that is going on, then gold is likely to benefit once the epicenter of this hurricane of risk moves on. Once we get out the other side and we start parsing just how much money has been printed and what kind of deflationary effect that is going to have and how low interest rates are going to stay for the foreseeable future, then that is likely to both put a big question over the solvency of governments, and that isn't likely to be an urgent problem until the velocity of money, in fact, rises. Now, we're just nowhere near that right now. This measure was last updated in September. It is likely to fall off a cliff when it is next updated. And the deflationary forces that are currently underway are something that definitely is going to inhibit a significant rally in government bond yields, particularly once the deleveraging process from a number of these hedge funds that are under pressure eventually subsides. But one thing that we do need to pay attention to is the fact that there aren't going to be any migrant workers given visas to enter the USA this year, and the USA is a massive agricultural producer. So they are going to have difficulty bringing the harvest in. Now, when we think about the soybean market, it pulled back sharply last week, but we did see some steadier trading here from the lower side of the range today. The wheat price has also started to steady up, and these are the first days on the upside for some of these commodity contracts. Wheat in particular now has had a sequence of higher reaction lows for about 9 months. So there is the scope here that we're going to see the commodities starting to break on the upside, and that raises the specter of commodity price inflation. Against a background where the economy is deflating and experiencing a significant contraction, then that does represent a challenge. So we do need to pay attention to the fact that commodity prices are not nearly as weak as they could be as a result of the conditions that we're seeing in the wider market. Coffee has steadied. Lumber is also steadying after a big decline. It was up nearly $15 today from the $300 area. When we think about the sugar price or the cocoa price, they are all starting to give evidence that there may be support starting to come through in the not so distant future. And it's also worth reminding ourselves that commodities cannot go to zero. There is obviously some potential here that we could see commodity price inflation coming through in the latter part of this year. It is really all down to how well can governments motivate people to get back into action, start to reinvigorate the economy once the worst of the outbreak has passed. Once we get to a condition where the healthcare systems of the world can tackle the number of cases, then there is a logical argument for allowing more economic activity to persist. But as long as we're still in the growth phase, then we're likely to continue to have a lot of uncertainty. I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.